This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Nicola Coughlin, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Youngest Heroes. Rebellion, risk, and the radical power of youth.
She thought, right, I'll just do it. She thought about others rather than herself.
12 stories of extraordinary young people from across history.
There's a real sense of urgency in them, that resistance has to be mounted, it has to be mounted now.
Follow History's Youngest Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Julian May, and this week we're revisiting the Argentinian artist Tomás Saraceno. We're in what used to be East Berlin, and his studio, a large red brick building, used to be a factory. It's covered in very colourful graffiti. The windows are barred, and beyond a heavy metal door is the space where Tomás creates the spiderweb works, airborne sculptures, and installations he exhibits all over the world. This building has its place in art history. This was the factory where the film company Agfa developed colour photography. Now, that was good for art, but not for the environment. The chemicals they brewed up and stored here ruined the soil.
They asked me, don't cultivate potatoes or apple trees or something, because besides not knowing the colours that the apple might come, also might be poison. I mean, it's kind of quite paradoxical. You know, the guys who have invented a record of how an apple should look like, which colour should have, they have poisoned the land for now, then maybe come up with a new colour, which is out of the canons of what it should look like, a colour of an apple.
You have two big buildings here. When you came here, were they derelict?
Yeah, I kind of protected the building. But yeah, they were completely... I think so nobody was in the building for more than 25 years or something like that. There were a lot of pigeons and other animals. And spiders.
Spiders,
we keep preserving them.
Ah, spiders. The creatures that so many people are scared of or hate, Tomás Saraceno loves. Spiders and their webs have intrigued and inspired him ever since he was a boy, growing up in interesting old homes in Tucumán, Argentina. Tomás Saraceno's mother was a biologist, his father an agronomist, so perhaps it's not surprising that he trained as an architect, and his art involves a great deal of science and engineering. His work is political and internationalist, in the sense that he is driven by a concern for the earth and all the people, animals and plants it sustains. He has shows all over the globe, and when I visited his studio in 2019, he was busy with an installation for the beach in Miami. Saraceno has an extraordinary, bold imagination. Has anyone else thought of fossil fuel-free hot air balloons that are sculptures? Has anyone else thought of turning the vibrations of the threads of spiderwebs into sounds? And from these, creating music? Although this is Thomas's studio, it's not just his studio. There's so many people here. Just how many has he got?
It depends really the time of the year and the project that we have been working. I mean, at the moment, maybe 50 or 60 people.
We have around 8 departments active in the studio.
So who are you?
I'm Roxanne Mackey. I work in the studio in the research and communications department. We take care of all of the various types of research going underway, the architecture along with Aerocene. Also take over material research, so we cross fields a lot of time. Very collaborative process here.
The thing about old factories is they have large spaces and high ceilings, and this is now a room full of people fabricating marvellous sculptures based on clouds, bubble formations, very, very beautiful. And there's 10 or 11 people in here all working away on these strange, intriguing sculptures that seem to float in the sky, and I think that's what they're going to do mostly. Who are you?
Sebastian, I'm one of the old architects working for Tomás.
Yeah, the longest ones here in studio, let's say that way.
And Sebastian, you're working on a big model here. What is this?
It's actually feasibility studies of how we can anchor to the building. So we always set up like a proposal, like come up with the design. And then the engineers always give us the limitations, so we just try to match like Thomas' vision with the engineers somehow to combine these somehow together in a nice aesthetic way.
I've spoken to architects who designed radical bridges, and there's always a tension between the architect's vision or the artist's vision and what is achievable by the engineers. Are you grappling with that, Sebastian?
Most of the time, to be honest, because like Thomas likes to have it as filigrane as possible, but we also need to secure this certain safety factors, and considering like worst case scenarios of weather impacts, we care a lot about the artworks and they should work for years and years, so we also check many times.
Where will this be made?
This is a commission which we cannot announce to public at the moment, but it's like a waterfront building, a waterfront public building actually, and it's like an outdoor commissions where people can see like the cloud formations towards the sky. So
it's going to be an epic scale cloud formation piece, a kind of sculpture on a waterfront somewhere in Europe. Yeah, okay. We're by a big table here, and there are some silver balloons. I mean, the lower hemisphere is reflective silver, and the top of it is transparent plastic, and there's a rather wonderful balloon here that's semi-inflated, and there are pictures of what you're working on now. What is this project?
Here we are in the section where we build all these sculptures which are able to elevate with the sun, which is quite different of all other balloons. Usually the rest of the balloons, they will always fly with helium. Helium is always a byproduct of fossil fuel extraction also, or the other way that you could fly also, like the Chinese candles. It's always combustion most of the time. How we can get up into the air, helicopter, aeroplane, is heavier than air otherwise. What we do here is we build sculptures which are very similar to the other one, but instead to burn things, heat that we get directly from the sun is how the sculptures elevate up into the air. And it's been based on that idea that we kind of thought that we could maybe enter in another epoch after the Anthropocene, that we call it Eocene.
The sphere has this radiation reflective material here. And this is a structure that we're testing with Twin Achieve and around the world flight. The entire concept of aerocene is this lighter-than-air principle. So these structures should be able to gain buoyancy through these temperamental differences from the inside of the sculptures and the outside air atmosphere. So it lifts into the air simply by the heat of the sun and is carried only by the wind, obviously a big testament against fossil fuels and fossil fuel-based methods of transportation that are dominant in the world right now. And yeah, if we move around a bit further, so this is another type of balloon. It's not the spherical form that you see in these structures. It's a more classic balloon shape. This really is about playing with different materials and playing with levels of reflectivity with the sun, because the sun actually is the most important collaborator in the Eocene endeavor, along with the winds and all of the elemental energies that it engages with.
Eocene, then, the idea of this is to get elevation without combustion, to get energy without fossil fuels, and it's all done with reflection of the sun.
Yeah, with directly heat of the sun.
And this project is...
Can they be a bit quiet, please?
Okay, thank you. And you're working here on a project for an exhibition, or an installation, yeah, I should say, right, in Miami. I know that this involves umbrellas of some kind. Can
yes.
we go and have
yes.
a have a look at your umbrellas?
Of course.
Is that over the road?
Yeah,
okay. We're going through the architecture department. Down these rather wonderful distressed stairs.
You have a sense of the history of this building, don't you? Yeah. You can imagine that they were brewing up noxious chemicals here. Yeah. And we're going, oh, a wonderful sculpture, spidery sculpture there. Everyone's having lunch.
It's a cantina, wasn't it? Oh my God,
crazy. Are you all coming out here for a cigarette?
Yeah.
So we've been through the canteen and now we're in the smoker's corner. It's like going behind the bike shed at school. So now across the yard there's a wonderful huge kind of netting sculpture of, well, a netting sculpture. Graffiti all over the building. It's rather good, I like it, you know. Now we're going into the Dormark storage lager. Oh, look, Thomas, we've come into a place which looks much more like an engineering works than a artist studio. Welding and metalwork going on. And around the corner, you've got these umbrellas, but these are kind of inverted umbrellas. Yes, exactly. What have we got?
Here we have an idea that we will present in Miami. Is this idea of have these umbrellas which somehow not only can protect you from the rain, but also can kind of comment on the global warming, the climate change, and the situation that the planet is heating up too much. This means just like by turning the umbrella upside down and having it kind of a silver, highly reflective surface, you could cool down the planet Earth and try to reflect the sun back to space. And at the same time, you could help these sculptures fly up into the air. At the same time, you can cook something. So it became a kind of a solar cooker also.
What you have to imagine is that you have an umbrella that's turned upside down. So it's like a big parabolic dish. It's all bright silver, reflective silver inside. And in the middle, you've somehow created a little attachment so you can have a cooking pot. Will this work, do you think? Will you be able to cook food in Miami?
We believe so. Yes, it will work. I mean, we have been testing a little bit, and here you can see many different models of how you can suspend the pot in the center of the umbrella where the sun have a focal point where the food can be heated.
Thomas, your art here is sculptural, but it's also political in a way, and it's certainly ecological. Your aim is to cool down the planet and cook food and create beautiful sculptures that float in the air as well. Now that's
without burning fossil fuel. It's quite inventive, you know. It's kind of trying to imagine what is a different future when we really kind of became much more imaginative and given a different time. I mean, I know the food when you place it here might not be cooked as fast as it will be burning something below, but it will cook. It will take a little bit. I mean, it's kind of with the idea of the slow movement food. We're trying to work also with all the food will be served with the local community, which is kind of urban farming, which is around Miami. And it's kind of really the project is about building community and trying to become excited and enthusiastic about something that maybe there is kind of a pleasure also to do things differently. I mean, it's something very, very simple, but I like this idea that it's very small, portable, and each of us can hopefully start to think differently. And act differently. I'm trying to change myself first. I think so. That's very important. You know, there is always this idea of the future comes from somewhere else, and we are trying to think that the future is something plural. There are many possibilities, and we have to shape it together.
Thomas Saraceno's studio is a labyrinth. Going back up the staircase.
I'm Nicola Coughlin, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Youngest Heroes. Rebellion, risk, and the radical power of youth.
She thought, right, I'll just do it. She thought about others rather than herself.
12 stories of extraordinary young people from across history.
there's a real sense of urgency in them, that resistance has to be mounted now.
Follow History's Youngest Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Julian May, revisiting my time with artist Tomás Saraceno in Berlin.
Why don't we go to your spider's laboratory? Yeah, that would be a good one to visit. So what's that, the third floor?
Yes.
Thomas has brought me in his arachnid laboratory to a big frame, which is full of spiders' webs like clouds. So you start off with a frame and a spider, and the spider creates a web, and then...
Another one who build a completely different web, kind of weave and use the threads of the other web.
I see. So you introduce another spider.
Yes.
And that spider produces a different web, but it interconnects with the previous web.
Yeah, exactly.
This is an ongoing piece of work, isn't
yeah.
it? You're working on at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
What is it?
These are spiders which are semi-social. Does it mean they weave one single web because they're all kind of interconnected, but each of them, they live kind of in its own small web. It's a conglomeration of many, many, many different webs together, but somehow they're all connected one to each other.
It's like a tower block of spiders' webs, isn't it? But it's also like the sky, it's like clouds.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're all living separately, but...
together somehow.
Thomas, in your work, in the Aerocene work and your spiders work, you're collaborating with other artists, but you're also collaborating with scientists, aren't you?
Yeah.
We've come into a darkened room. Oh, careful, there's a box here. There is a frame with the most beautiful and complex web in it, lit in the dark. It's extraordinary. And there's a big spider in the middle. Its legs are red, just hanging, waiting.
The threads are moving, no?
The threads are moving.
Usually you see how they float. Look, there's almost nothing, but somehow all these threads kind of float into the air. It's kind of so thin that it's quite magical, no? It's kind of really alive.
When you look at this work, do you think, this is my work? I made this? I'm the artist? Or what?
No, I think so is the work of the spider webs. But you also like give authorship, I think so, on the coexistence, no? Celebrate really this idea that we could be together and try to really kind of become much more sensitive of how we can coexist together. Look, she's now...
She's on the move.
She's weaving. She's continuing.
She's weaving. She's working.
Yeah.
And she's creating.
When you were asking before the collaboration, yes, we kind of collaborate with a lot of different universities, and once we develop this kind of scanning machine who kind of digitalize all these different nodes and points in space of the spider webs, it allows engineers and architects also try to optimize programs based on the understanding of how these marvelous works are built. This from one side, more architecture engineering. From the other side is trying to understand if these webs have some relationship with a cosmic web, and if there is this analogy that astrophysicists have put in place, try to find a much more calibrated understanding of a relation between these two scales. And we work with musicians and with biologists and try to really sense this language of vibration.
When you approach scientists and you say, for instance, with your Aerocene pieces, that you want, without fossil fuels, to create structures that will float in the sky. But beyond that, I know you have an idea that we can actually travel in this way.
Exactly.
Using what the air currents and such like. When you approach MIT or NASA as an artist and you say, I want to work on this, what is their response?
At the beginning, I cannot believe it. It's like a bit suspicious. And I could not believe sometimes when we launch balloon here from Berlin and we travel 800 kilometers without burning any fossil fuel, and then come the European Minister of Transportation and try to open up new corridors, which are zero emission, zero carbon, and much more sustainable than any other mode of transportation, then people start to get us more serious. And I mean, with MIT now, we develop a program that really kind of tell you within 16 days what is the best day which will take you to the destination where you want to go. I mean, if we are today in Berlin and you say, okay, I want to go to New York, it will tell you maybe day after tomorrow there is a wind in that direction will take you to the destination without burning any fossil fuel, and it'll be hopefully more attuned to this planet.
Oh, the spider's just on. Oh, a mosquito has landed in the web.
And the vibration.
There he is. Oh, he's escaped.
She's one of the more sensitive animals in the world. In the world, and I mean, maybe it's the best seismographer ever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was other times that tribes that were kind of living in Papua New Guinea learned the behavior of the ants, and when the ants were feeling a tsunami was happening, all the ants will go up to the mountain, and this means the indigenous tribes which were there, they will all go up to the mountain and nobody will die. Can we maybe rely on the perception of other species which are much more sensitive and sophisticated than any other scientific tool that today we are developing? And this means, again, kind of coupling, no, and try to read their perception and their ability to perceive their own world, and then try to, you know, tune again.
Right, we're on the top floor now. This is Thomas's inner sanctum. Your Miami project.
Yeah.
What will it actually look like?
Does it mean if it's early in the morning when the sun comes up from the horizon and there is not so much wind, things start to float up into the air?
You will have an arrangement of your inverted umbrellas.
Exactly, which are all positioned towards where the sun kind of make the trajectory.
On the beach?
On the beach.
In Miami?
Yeah.
And in the center there will be
a couple of sculptures which somehow will pick up the reflection from the sun, which is reflecting the umbrella, and hit the air of the inside of the sculpture. And then the sculpture hopefully will start to levitate.
Like the balloons we've seen downstairs.
Exactly, exactly.
And they'll go up into the air and they'll be tethered.
Yeah.
So they won't float off.
Yeah. Who knows if we...
At the end, maybe, you cut the rope.
Well, it's quite a complex thing to make a free fly. You have to ask the permission, the insurance. And you have to be in an area far away from the airport. And I think so for this time, we will not be able to do it. But yes, in Berlin, we usually every 2 or 3 months, we launch one of these sculptures free.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, wonderful. Thank you.
So a young man is coming in with a rucksack.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
So this looks like an ordinary rucksack,
yeah,
but this is part of your project, isn't
it? Yeah, so when you open it, I mean, you can portable, make it very easy, and then inside...
There's something that looks like a sleeping bag.
Yes.
And a telephone. What have you got here?
But inside is just like a sculpture that you can... There's a Velcro, you can kind of open it up, then run around, then put some air inside, then you close it again, then when the sun hit it up, it kind of starts to float up into the air. There's a bottle also, and inside the bottle there is a camera, two thermometers who tell you the temperature inside the sculpture, outside the sculpture.
Some kind of sensor and
solar panel. A camera, a sensor of humidity, pressure, and temperature. And at the same time, now together with our community, we are having like a particular sensor who tell you how much pollution is up into the air. The things that today you end up in your lungs and then produce a huge degree of mortality, allergy, and other things.
And who is going to fly this sculpture?
Anybody. I mean, we have approximately in Miami, I think so, 10 or 15 of them. And anybody who want to go there, they can experiment by themselves.
I love this idea. So someone will come along and you'll give them a rucksack with a sculpture in it, and they can go off.
Well, we give a little small training.
Small training. And there's an instruction booklet here. There's a pen. And they can fly one of these and record the flight.
Exactly.
And then one hopes that they will capture the sculpture again.
Because it's not only about launching it, but also like picking it back.
Yes.
And I mean, what we really promote, the people who want to do a free fly, make sure that you have a community in the other side where the wind blows, and when you speculate my landing, that will pick it up. This means we have lunch, and it's over 10 free flies, and we did not lose even one sculpture. Right. And also another community from the other side in Poland, Lithuania usually, who always very happily collaborate. It might spread this idea. It would be beautiful to get this. I mean, one of the old dreams that I have is always when people do this around the world, mm-hmm. it's always something about alone. And we want to do around the world together. And I mean, ideally, it will be really this idea that you launch, then it land, then another community pick it up, launch it again, and launch it again. And like this, we can do around the world together.
And you might have the first trans-global circumnavigation of the globe by a work of art powered by nothing but the sun.
Yes, and moved by the wind.
And moved by the wind.
With a community. There's this kind of environmental ecology, there is the social ecology and the mental ecology. There's been this kind of three ecologies. It's kind of really working with this different mode of being.
You've been listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service with the artist Tomás Saraceno. The programme was presented and produced by me, Julian May, and you can hear many, many more artists from around the globe on podcasts or on our website, bbcworldservice.com/in the studio.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart. From the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives. We bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.